This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 5th of April 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 5th of April 2013, which this week have been edited by Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. Your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. We start with an apology for the late dispatch of last week's recording. I hope it didn't spoil your enjoyment, but due to the extended bank holiday weekend, they were a little late getting out. Hopefully, we'll be back on track this week. Wheelie bins permitting. I gather they're moving all the wheelie bins out of Chesil Tunnel, so we may have to pause while lorries go in and out. Otherwise, you'll get a lot of background noise. Hopefully, that won't affect us too much. Now, this week's announcements, we start with What's On. And on Tuesday the 9th of April, there's a lunchtime concert in Winchester Cathedral. That's Tuesday the 9th of April at 1 p.m. And it's Claire Jones on piano, playing Beethoven, Chopin, Villa-Lobos and Jones, probably her own compositions. It's free with a retiring collection. At the Theatre Royal Winchester, West Side Story runs from the 18th to the 20th of April, at 7:30, and there's a Saturday matinee. For more information on West Side Story at the Theatre Royal, telephone 01962 840440. At the Chesil Theatre, Prin is on until the 13th of April at 7:45, and there is a Saturday matinee. For more information on this, it's 07527 471 539. The Mayflower at Southampton has Hairspray running between the 9th and 20th of April at 7:30, and that has matinees Thursday and Saturday. For more information, telephone the Mayflower box office on 02380 711 811. And at the Anvil Basingstoke, the Hampshire County Youth Band are playing on Saturday the 13th of April at 6 p.m. Excuse me. If you want more information, telephone the Anvil box office on 01256 844244. That's 01256 844244. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 5th of April at 6:33 a.m. and begins at 7:46 p.m. On Wednesday the 10th of April it ends at 6:22 a.m. and begins at 7:54 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your recording, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. Now the main headlines this week: Loans mix-up leaves students out of pocket. City in slow lane for speed curbs, and group goes for gold in new leisure centre bid. So, Shirley, may we have the first headline story, please?
And this is headed Loans Mix-Up Leaves Students Out of Pocket. Nearly 2,000 Winchester students have each lost out on £400 of student loan funding due to an admin blunder. Around 1,800 University of Winchester students found they were on average £415 light in their latest maintenance loan instalments, which were paid out by the student loans company, SLC, on March the 28th. University bosses said some students were overpaid in their first two instalments earlier this year, and that the next instalment has been reduced to recoup the money. But students are angry at losing vital money and the short notice of the decision. Claire Holman-Hobbs, a 21-year-old creative writing student of Five Fields Road, Highcliffe, said, "We found out about this days ago, just as our loans were about to be paid. This is a whole month's rent I'm about to lose. When I signed my loan agreement, it was for this amount, and I have budgeted my whole year by that basis. I feel completely let down by the university, as it is supposed to be looking out for us. We are learning how to survive in the world, and this is extra stress we don't need ahead of assessments and exams. George Mills, 20, a history student of Cromwell Road, said, "It's still a bit of a shock. We don't know why they made this massive mistake, and student loans have taught me nothing. Someone should lose their job for this." Martha Woolley, 21, another history student of Bar End Road, added, "These people are meant to be setting an example to us and helping us through life, but when something goes wrong, they start blaming each other, and it's so disheartening. The university is talking to the loan company, landlords and banks, but not to us. They are treating us like children rather than adults, and not telling us anything. Students can apply for a maximum of £3,300 per year in maintenance loans to support rent and living costs. Tuition fee loans are not affected. University Vice Chancellor Professor Joy Carter said the university was working hard to find a solution. She said, "To help offset this shortfall in funds, the university has agreed to reduce its forthcoming direct debit payments for students in university accommodation. Any outstanding amounts will be collected to an agreed payment plan. We have also contacted private landlords to inform them of the situation and request that they are sympathetic regarding rent payments." SLC said the mistake occurred after the university shortened its term dates, as the loans were calculated for extra weeks. Derek Ross, SLC Director of Operations and Customer Services, said, "This was necessary because the original term dates used by SLC to calculate the loans were incorrect, and as a consequence, they had been allocated more funds than they were entitled to. We realise that this may cause some students some financial difficulty, and a thorough investigation as to why these students have needed to be reassessed is currently being completed. We will work with Winchester University to ensure that it does not happen again."
City in slow lane for speed curbs. Plans for 20-mile-an-hour speed limits in a Winchester suburb are on hold after residents largely snubbed a consultation. The future of the County Council-funded Residential 20 trial in Stanmore looks uncertain because just 16% of questionnaires were completed. Of the 2,557 sent out, just 422 people responded. Of those, 75% felt it was a good idea. Civic chiefs decided the number was too low to constitute a mandate, and it is understood that any further decision will be put off until after the county council elections. City Councillor Rose Prowse said, "I'd like to think people in Stanmore do care about this issue, but you can't make people fill out forms. We felt there was enough feeling around the estate to push this forward, but you have to respect what people think. The response on the doorstep seems to be that people are quite keen for it." Councillor Brian Collin, a long-time champion of 20-mile-an-hour speed limits, said, "The problem is that Stanmore is a bit consultation-fatigued. There's also the Stanmore plan and all sorts of things going on." Questionnaires were sent to 11,000 residents in 10 Hampshire neighbourhoods where the limits could be trialled. In Medstead, near Alresford, 70% of respondents were in favour of the plan and the trial will go ahead. But Councillor Robert Sanders has questioned whether the scheme is necessary at all. He said, "Of course, I can understand the need for 20-mile-an-hour speed limits outside schools, for example, and if there was an evidence base to suggest that 20-mile-an-hour limits do actually change behaviour, then I might be in favour of it. but when this was first raised at the town forum, officers said they would come back with an evidence-based paper, and it hasn't happened.
And group goes for gold in new leisure centre bid. The sheer scope of a campaign for a new leisure centre in Winchester can now be seen with the release of a proposed plan for Bar End. The £25 million complex, spanning approximately 60,000 square metres, is suggested for playing fields off Bar End Road. The huge centre would include an indoor running strip, squash courts with movable walls, and a three-pool aqua zone, including an Olympic-size 50-metre swimming pool. The scale can be clearly seen with the centre located next to the 100-metre university-owned running track. The proposal would see the Serco depot replaced by a 359-space car park accessed off Bar End Road. Fit for the Future, an umbrella group of local sports clubs, has been campaigning for the new centre, arguing that the River Park Leisure Centre is insufficient for Winchester's needs. Fit for the Future, which has been consulting on environmental technologies, says that green energy would allow the carbon-neutral facility to generate its own power. However, city councillors are questioning the economic viability of the plans. Councillor Chris Pines, leader of the Labour group and who represents the area, said, "It's an intriguing idea. It's a very interesting idea, but it's got to make a decent return financially. I don't think I should say no, but you would have to go really, really cautiously before you committed to something like 30 million quid, which we don't have. We'd have to borrow it, and the charges for borrowing that much would be massive." The City Council is due to report on the feasibility of the plans later this month. The alternative to building a new sports hub is renovating the deteriorating River Park Leisure Centre. River Park is polluting, emitting 1,222 tonnes of greenhouse gas in 2011-12, more than triple that of any other council building in Winchester. The council says that improvements could reduce its carbon footprint and keep it running for another 10 years. Campaigners say that a new centre could serve Hampshire for between 30 and 50 years. Emma Back, of director of Fit for the Future, denied the plans were too ambitious. "It's not shooting to the moon. The stuff we're talking about is by no means outrageous," she said. "It's what many other cities and towns of similar sizes to ours, and smaller in some cases, have already." More than 25 institutions, sports clubs and public figures in Hampshire have voiced support for a new centre, including Winchester MP Steve Brine. Councillor Keith Wood, leader of the council, said a decision regarding River Park was looming. "The problem with the River Park Leisure Centre is that it needs quite a lot of money spent on it. It seems to me that Winchester City Council over many years has been ducking this issue. If we don't make a decision will be made for us," said Councillor Wood. One major sticking point would be the future of the Serco depot, earmarked for car parking. Some councillors want the site to be used for housing, but the official policy is for business development.
And that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices and then Christian comment. The announcements of death this week. Beavis, Leonard Beavis, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 88. Berger, Ivor Berger, on the 31st of March, aged 89. Epps, Albert Epps, on the 22nd of March, after a short illness, aged 85. Gates, Sheila Mabel Gates, who died peacefully on the 27th of March, aged 85. Genvy, Helen Elizabeth Genvy, née Walker, died on the 22nd of March after a short illness, aged 85. Lovegrove, Iris Eileen Lovegrove, died peacefully on the 1st of April, aged 89. Martin, Mona Emily Martin, died peacefully at Abbots Barton Care Home, aged 96. Mulvey, Blanche Florence Mulvey, died on the 29th of March, aged 92. Rollinson, Gordon Rollinson, died peacefully at home, aged 84. Saunders, Robin Saunders, died in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a long illness, aged 70. Vale, John Richard Vale, died on the 22nd of March. And Watmore, Maud Watmore, died on the 23rd of March, aged 89. And now we're going to move on to a Christian comment. That's going to be read by Shirley.
Right. It's headed, Should We Spread the Misery? And it is written by Rosemary A. Baker. The recent changes in welfare and benefits introduced by the coalition government have caused Christian leaders in this country to speak out against them. The new Archbishop of Canterbury, the Most Reverend Justin Welby, has criticised the government's plans to hold welfare payment increases below inflation. Along with more than 40 bishops, he argued that we have a duty to support those among us who are vulnerable and in need. Is that true? If it is, what does that duty demand? Must we guarantee a minimum standard of living for all? Should it be an absolute priority to protect children from poverty? Should the government redistribute wealth from the richest to the poorest, even if that damages the collective prosperity of the nation? We might consider whether, in times of austerity, we have a moral duty to spread the misery as fairly as possible. We might also look at what we mean by poverty. Is the official EU definition a household income below 60% of median income a trustworthy guide to the point at which the state should offer its help? Or should we give handouts only to those who would starve without them? A coalition of some of the other major churches, the Baptist Union of Great Britain, the Methodist Church, the United Reformed Church and the Church of Scotland have also criticised the government and sections of the media for what they call systematic misrepresentation of the poorest in society. They claim that certain myths about the poor are what have led to these changes, namely that they are lazy, dishonest, addicted to drugs and or alcohol. It's easy to see how these myths arrive, as doubtless there are some folk who claim they could work and some who are not really entitled who do so as well. But this detracts from the many who genuinely struggle to make ends meet. The Conservative Party chairman's comments on these leaders that they have not spoken out in the past does not, I believe, invalidate their comments now. Indeed, perhaps we should all speak out more. Perhaps we should all try to do more to help as well. We can all donate in the Sainsbury's food bank trolley, but what of the supermarkets that don't have these? I'm sure some donate in other ways. Do we know about them? It's sometimes cheaper to buy in bulk, but what if you haven't the money to outlay in the first place? Could churches and Christians do more to help those on low incomes in this respect? Food for thought.
Thank you, Shirley. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Noel, you're going to start us off.
Yes, Peter Hargreaves writes, "We never voted for full-time councillors." Excuse me. "Sir, we never voted for full-time councillors, but it's happening. For many years, city and county councillors provided excellent service and at low cost. Mostly people in employment, they were prepared to dedicate their own time for the benefit of their communities. Payment was quite small and only paid for loss of earnings, so it was not a motivation for standing for election, as it appears to be today. But that changed in 2000 when the Labour government introduced fixed annual payments which can be augmented with responsibility allowances. For example, Councillor Mel Kendall, a New Milton Tory district councillor, claimed £50,000 for 2011 to 2012. They can also ask the taxpayer to contribute 6% of their allowances to their gold-plated pension. In the upcoming county council elections, several candidates are already serving Winchester city councillors. If they succeed, they'll be on the next run to being full-time councillors and receiving a full-time salary. Examples are Conservative councillors Rob Humby and Ian Tate, both cabinet members on the city council. As a city councillor receiving a special responsibility allowance, Councillor Humby receives £11,709. But if elected to the county, this would increase to £26,712. Councillor Tate receives £13,080 in city allowances, but if elected to the county, this would increase to £25,083. I urge electors not to vote for candidates at the county council election who are already city councillors. It was never intended that they should become full-time councillors, and they should decide whether they want to devote their time to the city or county council. Councillors taking seats on both councils are selfishly blocking others who would welcome the chance to serve. What is inexcusable is that the Conservatives are encouraging this practice, resulting in high-flying councillors claiming large allowances even though they operate their own businesses. Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And this letter is from Paul Cooper and headed, "No clear-cut case in favour of Westgate." Sir, re-Councillor Perry's letter in the Chronicle, March the 21st, of course the needs of Winchester children are prime, but he is suggesting there is only a single solution. No one is doubting the shortage, nationally or in Winchester, of primary education places or of the County Council's duty to so provide. What we argue is that the proposed solution is the suboptimal one. We have seen the flawed assumptions underlying the case and HCC's recent attempts to address these, but it doesn't get away from the concept that a sow's ear is still a sow's ear. Increased parking in Chilbolton Avenue fails to recognise the apparent safety issues here, whilst proposed scooter routes to school are frankly completely off the wall. Is this meant to address the problem of only having a solitary cyclist at Westgate? Surely that statistic is recognition in itself of parental concerns re-safety. What parent would let their child use scooters on Winchester pavements adjoining busy roads, not to mention the increased risk from children speeding past blind residential drive exits? No, the problem is the flawed decision made on July the 17th, 2012. If Councillor Perry was to review his own officials' briefing documents for that decision day, there is no clear-cut case in favour of Westgate other than the expediency of land ownership. We need neighbourhood school expansion with local catchment areas offering genuinely safe walk-to-school routes to prevent distance commuting by pupils and parents. And it costs not a cent more. I suspect the attraction of a shiny new building and adoption of an educational experiment is driving decision-making here. And that was from Paul Cooper of Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this one is headed, "Why Quality of Life Must Be Considered," and it's from Miss L. Wright. "Sir, read the debate about Barton Farm and the closure of the Andover Road. This is a serious matter which needs to be carefully reviewed. It continues to amaze me that putting a major north-south road artery through the middle of a housing estate is deemed to be an appropriate way to integrate that community with Winchester. As Barton Farm will be larger than most villages in the area, 25% larger than South Wanston, for example, the traffic which 2,000 new households will generate will be considerable. No doubt it will be marketed as a safe, tranquil and pleasant place in which to raise families, as schools are being planned for the site. However, Winchester is already concerned about the increased traffic and the degree of pollution in the city, and is debating draconian measures to reduce traffic and pollution levels in what is a largely commercial centre. How can routing the additional north-south traffic with its attendant pollution through a heavily populated residential area be justified? Already, planners are concerned about the additional traffic to and from Winchester, which the proposed expansion of Worthy Down will create. The concept that the closed down section of the Andover Road will become a traffic-free sylvan idyll is unrealistic. Provision will have to be made for access to the existing homes fronting the Andover Road. Furthermore, the loss of the bus service will disadvantage residents in this area, especially those living in Mountbatten Court. The quality of life must be considered when building such a large residential conurbation, and must take into account traffic levels now and in the future. And that's from Miss L. Wright, Orchard Close, South Wanston.
And Robin Atkins suggests that a rugby club needs to show gratitude. Sir, I wish to make a few new comments with regard to Alresford Town Council and the rugby club story. When I was a councillor and chaired both the Town Council and Recreation Committee, we embarked on the largest ever project with the Football Foundation and the Alresford Town Football Club. The project cost £700,000 and extended the building at Albury Park to include four new changing rooms, two of which had room for 15-a-side rugby teams. If it was not for the generosity of the Football Foundation and the Alresford Town Football Club and the foresight of the Town Council, the rugby club would have no facilities to change in. Trevor Ingram, chairman of ATFC, worked very closely with both the Town Council and the Football Foundation, and all the requirement, specification and tendering process were checked and signed by both ATFC and the Council. There were regular conversations and emails, and everything was agreed and done properly. Now, some 6 years later, Alresford Town Football Club have developed into a successful and well-managed football club. The rugby club needs to be grateful for both the facilities at Albury Park and the latest efforts to buy the 3.8 acres of land for £250,000. I would like to see one pitch and training area on this land. The rugby club will need time to build itself into a successful and bigger club. Robin Atkins, Lindley Gardens, Alresford.
And this is from Keith Story and is headed "A Call for Everyone to Be More Realistic." Sir, every year people call for homes to be cheaper to buy, including residents of Alresford, who recently asked for proposed new open market homes to be cheaper. Chronicle, March the 21st. But I call for everyone to be more realistic. Homes were never cheap, and I recall how hard it was 40 years ago when I needed a 35% deposit for a mortgage with an interest rate of 8%. I would have loved today's requirement for only a 25% deposit for a mortgage at only 4% interest. Halifax recently reported that house buying was the most affordable for more than a decade, but it still requires a commitment over several years to buy a home. The key success is to get qualified at school, college, university or training courses for paid work and to start saving hard. It is disappointing to see young people eating and drinking their house deposit and incurring other unnecessary expenses, then whining when unable to buy a house. It's about choices. People who want a deposit should go without the following items for at least 3 years, but up to 10 years in high-price areas. Bars, clubs, restaurants, takeaways, bottled water, cigarettes, alcohol, snacks, hairdressers, cosmetics, tanning salons, body piercing, tattoos, gyms, new clothes, new furniture, new cars, new books, CDs, DVDs, magazines, iPhones, satellite TV, cinema, theatre, football matches, foreign holidays and gap years. Of course, at about £5,000 per child a year, having children is perhaps the biggest single discretionary expense that can delay saving a deposit. If this sounds boring, it is amazing how much your needs can be met by using your local library, shopping at charity shops, eating freshly prepared food at home or with friends, and using the whole outdoors as your gymnasium. A walk or run in the countryside costs nothing, and watching sunsets or wildlife is free. Does this saving strategy work? Well, it did for us. Though even with our 35% deposit, the bank manager expected us not to have children for 5 years. Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester.
And now this one is from Nicolette Cotterill, and it's headed, "What have they got against children?" Sir, so we're in 2013, in a day and age where buying a home is tough. Many of us depend on the rental market to borrow someone else's investment over a period of time. Over the years, I've rented all sorts, and with each experience, my needs for a suitable home have changed. Circumstances find me with 3 young children and no partner. It's my priority to find a good family home for my offspring. They are my life, and I want to give them the world, especially a home where they are secure, comfortable, and happy. That's what a home is. I search and find a couple of gems. Close to school, round the corner from my family, and down the road from work. I view the first. Yes, that'll do. I find myself up against a couple with a dog and cat. I wait 2 days, but it's not me. I ask why, and am told the landlady has chosen pets over my 3 young children. I've nothing against pets, but I'm told in very certain terms that no young children are wanted for this home. I try not to take it personally and move on to future home number 2, which is ideal. I picture my things in it and my children enjoying it. I express my interest and finally get the call. In the back of my mind, I'm worried. I'm rejected. What are the grounds? My 3 young children. I'm continuing my search, but I'm not confident. Where did it say that children would not be considered? I understand landlords want minimal wear and tear. I'd want to protect my investment too. But I'm a well-brought-up, respected, professional mother of 3 young children who need a home. I'm being judged before I'm even given a chance. Wish me luck. I'm going to need it. Nicolette Cotterill, Ashdown Close, Chandler's Ford.
Thank you. And before we move on to the historical items, I'll just read your say. We asked, do you agree teachers should be allowed to strike over their pay and pensions? Dennis Hill, 83, retired of Boyett Crescent Otterbourne, said, I don't see why teachers should go on strike. I haven't got a lot of time for people who strike. If they don't like their job, they should pack it in. If I still had young children, a strike would disrupt my life. Tom Williams, aged 19, a rugby coach of Eastgate Street, Winchester, said, if you're not being treated fairly in your job, why shouldn't you strike? It's not down to teachers to try to avoid a strike. It's down to the managers to stop them by making employees as happy as possible. Sally Binstead, aged 45, a cafe worker of Parkway Gardens, Chandler's Ford, said, I understand teachers wanting to fight for their pay and fewer hours if it eats into their evening time. Given enough notice, a strike would not be a huge deal for me. Everybody has to be able to fight for their rights. And Santi Morgan, 16, a student of Itchen Abbas, said, I don't think it matters much at primary school level. But when teachers go on strike with GCSE and A-level exams coming up, that's when it's important. They should be around and should not be able to just quit like that. And if you want to make your comment and contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write in the old-fashioned way to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we're going to move on to historical items, Noel.
Yes, two items from 200 years ago, 1813. The Amelia lately arrived at Portsmouth after a desperate action with the French frigate L'Arethusa off the coast of Africa. Since October 1811, captured 9 Portuguese ships employed in the inhuman traffic of slaves, thereby releasing 1,847 men, women and children for a better fate. Several of the boys are now servants to officers on the Amelia. Whilst the Amelia was on the coast, the natives murdered General Meredith on the Gold Coast. They, supposing he had concealed large quantities of gold, lay in wait as he was walking in his garden. And the second item, somewhat topical, the Chancellor of the Exchequer opened the budget for this year in a very clear and convincing speech. Taxes imposed are an increase of custom duties of 35%, with the exception of tea, sugar, wine, raw silk and cotton wool. This, it is estimated, will produce £900,000. An additional excise duty of 13 pence a bottle on French wines is estimated to produce £30,000, with additional duty on tobacco, £100,000.
And two items from 50 years ago, 1963. A new report on the use of television in Hampshire schools draws attention to the need of more programmes aimed at pupils in the lower ability range. Information gained from both primary and secondary schools suggests that the majority of the present productions are aimed at the above average pupil. And the second one? Strong protests against the proposals in the Beeching Plan to close the Winchester-Alton Railway were voiced by the Alresford Chamber of Commerce at their meeting last Monday, with Mr. P. E. Burchett presiding. Among the points made was the cost to transport of school children by special coaches to Winchester and Alton, who at present use the train. Secondly, Alresford is one of the principal watergrass-growing centres and needs a reliable rail link. Thirdly, the plan ignores the growth potential of places whose rail services are destined for closure.
And this one from 25 years ago, 1988. The Peninsula Barracks site in Winchester is to go on the market for development early this summer. The news, released by the Property Services Agency, is a blow to the City Council. Councillors expected that, in exchange for allowing the Royal Green Jackets to develop the Greenfield site at Flowerdown, the City would have a major say in how the barracks would be developed. One even described the Ministry of Defence as rats, while another, Mr. Patrick Davis, described the situation as disgraceful. And the second item is a claim that the Royal Hants County Hospital is among the most inefficiently run hospital in the country has been strongly refuted by managers. Government figures reveal that in 1986-87, Winchester patients requiring trauma or orthopaedic operations, including hip replacements, had to wait up to 2 years, while in Harrogate, a patient would have waited less than a month. The national average is 221 days.
Thank you. Now we move on to Chronicle comment on first person, Noel.
A scheme deserves a sporting chance, says the editorial comment. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. That should be the mantra the City Council adopts when deciding what to do about leisure facilities in the district. This week, a campaign group lobbying for a new state-of-the-art leisure centre showcased its ambitious plan. The £25 million complex, spanning approximately 60,000 square metres, is suggested for playing fields off Bar End Road. The huge centre would include an indoor running strip, squash courts with movable walls, and a three-pool aqua zone, including an Olympic-sized 50-metre swimming pool. Fit for the Future, an umbrella group of local sports clubs, has been campaigning for the new centre, arguing that the River Park Leisure Centre is insufficient for Winchester's needs. There's no dispute that River Park is crumbling and polluting, and that a sparkling new centre bursting with the latest environmental technologies would be greener, allowing the carbon-neutral facility to generate its own power. Campaigners claim the plan is what many other cities and towns of similar size to Winchester already enjoy. Councillors have a tough decision to make, not least on the huge cost of it. But the health and well-being of a generation is at stake here.
And first person by Ron Allison is happening in Hampshire this week. So, now we know. Winchester is an expensive place in which to live. In fact, according to last week's Chronicle, quoting a few survey of house prices, it is the fifth most costly in the United Kingdom. Well, I don't know about the league position, but my bank balance has regularly confirmed the overall fact. The point is that old conundrum, cost versus value, and each of us makes our own judgment. Interestingly, the six most expensive towns or cities are all in the south of England, while the three least costly are in Northern Ireland. This was, as it happened, only one of several strong stories making that week's Winchester District Edition something of an editor's dream. This doesn't happen at a provincial weekly 50 times a year, but when it does, its editor becomes a very happy man. Or, going back to my days on the staff of the paper, a very happy woman. All the stories will have important or fascinating consequences, hopefully both. The front page was shared between the LEED, government approval for the compulsory purchase of land in the centre of the city for the development of Silver Hill, and, somewhat in contrast, the exhumation of an unmarked grave in Hyde, which may or may not contain the bones of Alfred the Great. Perhaps it is one of the attractions of Winchester that the larger-than-life statue of the king looks down on the site of the planned rebuilding. Would he approve? Will the exhumed remains be his? As they say, watch this space, though you will have to be patient. Elsewhere, an interview with the recently appointed governor of Winchester Prison, David Rogers, revealed a man facing an immense challenge. His inheritance was a jail described officially as neglected and drifting. 6 months into his new job, Mr. Rogers may not have too much time to worry about Silverhill or Alfred, but it was encouraging to read of his attitude and approach. What a job to tackle. Sport also offered its share of the headlines, as Winchester Rugby Club confirmed its promotion within the London South West Divisions. The news from the nearby Denplan City ground was not so good, though. Winchester City is facing serious financial problems, to the extent that the club needs new backing to be sure of survival. Of course, by the time you read this column, all these stories, and the others from around the county, may well have moved on. It would not be good news if there was no news, but don't worry, something interesting will always be happening in Hampshire and covered in the Chronicle.
Thank you. Now we continue with further items of general news. Shirley.
This one is headed, more police to be trained on tasers. 200 more police officers in Hampshire will be trained so they can be equipped with tasers on the county's streets. As previously reported, £100,000 has been put aside to pay for the training and equipment that will be given to officers in more rural communities to help them deal with violent situations. Currently, only 160 officers in the county are able to use the 50,000 volt weapons, which are designed to incapacitate an offender in a less lethal way. They are mainly staff in the specialist firearms department and a small number on the Isle of Wight, where there would be a long delay waiting for the deployment of an armed response team to live incidents. Now the total figure will rise to 360, 11% of Hampshire's officers, who will go through training in the coming year. The Chronicle reported in February how new Chief Constable Andy Marsh was planning to arm more officers with the tool, enabling them to better protect themselves and the public. Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes has since told how he would like all frontline officers to be equipped to use a taser. The move comes in light of increased violence against police officers and PCSOs, and at least 70 incidents involving a firearm on the county's streets last year. In England and Wales, police forces average at 11.5% of officers able to use the equipment.
New era for healthcare in the county. Local doctors have welcomed being at the heart of a new era of healthcare across Hampshire. From midnight last Sunday, primary care trusts were abolished as part of the biggest reforms to the NHS since it was launched in 1948. They have been replaced by clinical commissioning groups, CCGs, new organisations led by family doctors who will be responsible for planning and buying healthcare services for their areas. Test Valley's Dr. Sarah Schofield, who has 25 years medical experience, is chair of the CCG in this area and is excited about the new arrangement, which she says puts clinicians in the driving seat. She said, "I definitely think we can make a difference to healthcare and thus to lives. I think that GPs are in very close contact with stories of local healthcare which can influence change and development to embed good practice and improve weaker practice. Working with partners through the Health and Wellbeing Board, we will be able to focus on health prevention as well as treatment of illness." The reforms are a key part of the government's agenda to give GPs and other clinicians a much greater say in improving services for their patients. NHS West Hampshire CCG will represent more than 500,000 patients in the New Forest, Eastleigh, Winchester and Test Valley areas, including Andover and the Avon Valley. It will be the largest of five CCGs in Hampshire and will have a £582 million budget to cover acute hospitals, community services and prescribing services for their local populations. As far as family doctors are concerned, patients will still deal with the same staff that they always do. The work of most GPs at the 54 member practices will be unaffected, but some will play an active part in CCG business while continuing their duties as doctors, supported by professional full-time staff.
And this is headed, "Arsonist Admits Starting Three Fires in City Centre." An arsonist is facing a prison sentence after admitting to starting three fires in Winchester City Centre on New Year's Day. Sean Clements, 47, of no fixed address, will be sentenced in May when he returns to Winchester Crown Court. Last week he pleaded guilty of two charges of arson, being reckless as to whether life would be endangered, another charge of arson and assault. Clements set fires at the deanery in the Cathedral Close, Phase 8 boutique on the High Street and a goods yard off Upper Brook Street. He was remanded in custody until sentencing on May the 28th. Around 120 people were evacuated from the cathedral's open-air ice rink as the nearby fire damaged doors of the deanery and destroyed dozens of books. The blaze caused an estimated £2,000 to £3,000 of damage to the 12th century building. Clements started the fire in Upper Brook Street in a bin, but it never took hold thanks to quick-thinking staff at the nearby Bengal Sage restaurant. Phase 8 has been boarded up since the incident after a wheelie bin was set alight and pushed through a window.
And this one is entitled Royal Banger Strikes Gold in BPX Awards. A sausage named after King Alfred has been declared one of the greats of southern England. The King Alfred sausage, made by Andover's Greenfield Pork Products, was handed a champion title at the South of England Butcher Roadshow and Pork Produce Excellence Awards. Organised by BPEX, 206 pork products were scrutinised by industry experts at the Ardingly Showground. The banger struck gold in the traditional pork sausage category and wowed judges to claim the top spot from 42 entries. In addition, Martin Martindale walked away with a further 8 gold awards, one for every single product entered. Farmer and owner Martin said, "We're delighted. To get gold for all of our products is a fantastic achievement. The King Alfred is our biggest seller, so we're especially thrilled to have been crowned champion with it. It was developed for Winchester Farmers Market, which is where the name came from, because of King Alfred's ties to the area. I think it's so popular because it's a good traditional sausage, suitable for all tastes. Little fat is lost in cooking, and it keeps its shape. The pork is all free range from our own farm. Sausages are our main products, and we have around 14 different on sale each week. We have varieties like the Jubilee, which we created last year, with milk, cracked black pepper, and a Worcester sauce kick, which also took gold. We make for different pubs and village stores and would encourage people to try them at Hampshire farmers' markets. We started producing our own sausages in around 2004 and taught ourselves. We took a long time developing our skills because we really wanted to get it right, and these awards are a real pat on the back for all our work." Keith Fisher, BPEX Butchery and Product Development Manager, said, "This event is hugely popular and draws in a very high standard of entry. To pick up a gold is very commendable. To come away as a champion is an incredible achievement. We wish Martin continued success."
Blaze spreads to neighbouring village homes. More than 100 firefighters fought a blaze which spread through 3 cottages in a village last week. Emergency services were called around 7 p.m. last Friday to East Meon High Street after reports that a thatched roof had caught fire. Flames spread to 2 cottages either side of the home where the fire is believed to have started. Part of East Meon High Street was closed for several hours while emergency services were at the scene. Station manager Dave Graham of Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service said at least 100 firefighters with 12 pumps, 4 water carriers and specialist equipment are involved in putting out the flames. The residents of the 3 cottages affected by fire were offered accommodation for the night by neighbours. A nearby pub was evacuated as a precaution due to smoke. No other properties were affected and no injuries were reported. A spokesman for the police said on Friday that an investigation into the cause of the fire was ongoing, but at the time there were no indications that it was suspicious.
And Carla convinced rerouting road is right thing to do. Controversy over the rerouting of Andover Road shows no signs of abating following the most recent Barton Farm Forum. Around 40 members of the public were at Winchester Guildhall last Wednesday to hear an update on plans to divert a stretch of the main road through the new development. The county's highways officer, Steve Jenkins, fielded questions from concerned residents on the safety of pedestrians in the shared space areas of the development. the possibility of rat runs developing in response to the slower nature of the diverted section, and whether there was sufficient infrastructure to cope with the increased number of vehicles. But Carla Land Director Mike Emmett said, "I have thought about this long and hard, and having spent several months looking at this, we can be completely convinced that what we're doing is the right thing." Only one member of the public, Tommy Geddes, formerly Deputy Vice-Chancellor at Winchester University, spoke in favour of the proposals. "I think the plans for the diversion are well thought out and well considered," he said. "The critical thing is to stop the new development from splitting Weak and Hairstock. I think this is a very good, positive reason for diverting the road." Mr. Jenkins told the meeting that the diverted section of the road will be 2.8 kilometres in length, will largely be a 30-mile-per-hour zone, and will increase journey times into the city by about 90 seconds.
And this one is headed, "I'd rather skydive," says Sylvia, 88. "Jumping out of an aeroplane is a daunting prospect, but for an 88-year-old from Winchester, it's preferable to walking. Sylvia Stops is skydiving to raise money for Parkinson's UK and says she can't wait. Miss Stops, who lives in Twyford, said, "I'm getting a bit ancient now, and I heard about all these charity walks to support the charity, but I couldn't do that. But I think it's easier to skydive. I had heard of elderly people doing it for their birthday, so I thought I could do it for charity. The village reaction has been one of surprise and amazement, and so therefore I'm getting a lot of support." She will be taking the plunge this Saturday, April 6th, by which time Miss Stops, who spent her working life as a physiotherapist in Hampshire, will be 89. She will head to Netheravon Airfield in Wiltshire and undertake a medical before getting the all clear. "My doctor and hip surgeon have declared me fit," she said. "I will face another medical on the day, but fully intend to make the jump for this very worthy cause." Paul Jackson Clark, Director of Fundraising at Parkinson's UK, said, "Leaping out of a plane certainly isn't for the faint-hearted, and we'd like to wish Sylvia the best of luck for her thrilling challenge." There will be 29 people taking part, all in support of the charity, and Miss Stops will jump in tandem with an experienced skydiver. She said she's glad to be getting more support than if she had arranged a coffee morning, but admits that when it comes to the task itself, the full scale of the challenge may not have sunk in yet. "I'm sure I shall be absolutely terrified on the day," she added.
Council's cash incentive to downsize. Civic chiefs have set aside £100,000 for cash incentives to encourage Winchester residents to downsize to smaller council houses. The bedroom tax, which was introduced on Monday, will hit tenants in homes with spare rooms, and the £1,000 incentives will now be offered to council tenants who trade in at least one bedroom. News comes in the wake of a report showing 51% of the City Council's housing is under-occupied. The money can be taken either as a lump sum or to be used for things like removal services as required. The same report, presented at a meeting of housing bosses last Wednesday, said the council is keen to avoid tenants becoming trapped by the bedroom tax, no longer able to afford their homes, but without the money to move out. The City Council says the current rate of moving to smaller homes is low, and giving the incentive will increase numbers, and estimates that 300 households will be affected by the bedroom tax, with 123 losing between £10 to £15 a week. But Councillor Patricia Stallard said, "I'm no mathematician, but I can see that 300 times £1,000 is more than the £100,000 we have budgeted."
And this one is entitled, "Come and Join Us, Cancer Charity's New Faces." A new volunteer fundraising group for Marie Curie Cancer Care has launched in Winchester. Its first activity was helping with the Great Daffodil Appeal to help the terminally ill. All funds raised will help Marie Curie nurses care for local people in their own home. Sally Sansom, community fundraiser, said, "We are really excited to have this new group and would ask people to support them by picking up a daffodil pin this spring. Our nurses care for people in the Winchester area, and every hour of care costs the charity £20, so the new group will make a huge difference to helping to raise vital funds. Later in the year, the group are planning a Blooming Great Tea Party, as well as promoting fundraising within the community and encouraging new supporters to help. Miss Sansom is on 02380 263 123, that is 02380 263 123, and the article is accompanied by a photo of five ladies holding up glasses of champagne and a big poster of daffodil-shaped people saying, "Join us, Marie Curie Cancer Care," and they're all wearing the T-shirt shirts with daffodils on them and huge daffodil-shaped yellow top hats.
This is headed Winchester Fashion Week Makes Return. Winchester's Festival of Fashion is due to take place later this month, organisers have confirmed. Now, in its third year, Winchester Fashion Week will be held between April the 15th and the 21st and include interactive workshops, engaging talks, exclusive promotions and style advice. The week will culminate in two elegant catwalk shows held in the Guildhall on Saturday, April 20th. Having taken over the organising reins from the University of Winchester Fashion Degree students, Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, in partnership with See Me Productions and media partners, The Breeze, and the Hampshire Chronicle, are aiming to make it the biggest, liveliest and most significant Winchester Fashion Week to date. Also included within the programme is a couple of exciting millinery workshops, Introduction to Millinery on Wednesday, April 17th with Rachel Drewer, and Make a Simple Fascinator on Friday, April 19th with Margot Chamberlain. Ladies can also enjoy a girls' night in at LK Bennett with an exclusive style and trend update with House of Colour consultant Katie Russell. Professional models will showcase the latest collections on the catwalk at the showcase event at the Guildhall at 2:30 and 7 p.m. from more than 20 of Winchester's national and independent retailers. They will draw their inspiration from relaxed day wear to elegant evening wear and bridal gowns. Afternoon tickets cost £5, concessions available, and evening tickets cost £20 and include a glass of wine, canapes and goodie bag. Bid manager Catherine Turness said, "Thanks to the sponsors of Winchester Fashion Week, Jeeves and Hawkes, Hobbs, Jeremy France Jewellers, LK Bennett and Pavilion, we are able to coordinate a fantastic programme of events which truly celebrates the vibrant mix of retailers and designers we have here in the city. For the full list of events and for tickets, visit www.winchesterfashionweek.com."
Superfast broadband for 90% of properties. Thousands of Hampshire homes and businesses will gain access to superfast broadband in the next 3 years. More than 57,000 properties in rural areas of Hampshire will enjoy high-speed internet by 2016, thanks to a new deal between Hampshire County Council and BT. The council has signed a £13.8 million deal with the telecoms giant to provide high-speed connection to 90% of homes and businesses across the county, and it is hoped some areas will benefit by the end of the year. Superfast broadband has a speed of 24 megabytes per second, double the current average in the UK. Councillor Ken Thorburn, County Council leader, said, "This is a great day for Hampshire, and it marks the culmination of many months of hard work. I'm very pleased that BT can now start work on putting in the necessary infrastructure that will benefit so many businesses and households, predominantly located in the less populated and harder to reach areas of Hampshire." Bill Murphy, Managing Director, Next Generation Access BT, added, "This is fantastic news for Hampshire, and this project will move the county well and truly into the broadband fast lane, with fibre being rolled out to more than 9 out of 10 properties in the county. We are proud to be involved in this important programme, which will boost the local economy and keep Hampshire connected and competitive for the future." It comes after Hampshire residents and business owners met with council and government officials, including Culture Secretary Miriam Miller, to discuss the plans at a conference at the end of last month. Maria Miller, MP, Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, said, "Access to the internet and fast broadband is crucial to the ongoing and economic prosperity of the region. Putting in this network infrastructure is as important as other major transport infrastructures like roads, rail and airports, and as essential as water, gas and electricity. The UK already does more business online than any other European country, and widespread access to superfast broadband will provide a tremendous boost to Hampshire's local economy." And this article is accompanied by a picture of Bill Murphy, the Managing Director of Next Access BT, with Hampshire County Council leader, Councillor Ken Thornburgh, both looking very pleased with themselves in front of a screen showing contract signed, www.hants.gov.uk/broadband.
And this is entitled Wanted, Wildlife-Friendly Farmers. A national bird charity has launched its search to find the most wildlife-friendly farmer in Hampshire. The RSPB says last year's winner of the South East England category of the nationwide Nature of Farming Award was from West Sussex, and they are hoping more Hampshire farmers take part in this year's challenge. The award celebrates farmers who work hardest to help threatened countryside wildlife, such as skylarks, brown hares, bees, butterflies and plants. Last year's regional winner, Peter Knight, who farms on the South Downs, says, "It is important to achieve a balance between farming commercially alongside a way that encourages wildlife. The increase in wildlife has been largely down to the implementation of Natural England's agri-environmental schemes. Farmers wanting to take part should do so before April the 18th. Spokesperson Sam Stokes said, "There is always a high volume of entries, with numbers rising year on year, and the charity hopes this year will be its best yet. When all entries are in, 8 regional winners will be selected, and a panel of experts will pick 4 to go through to the national finals. The public will choose the overall winner online." Nick Droy, RSPB Head of Conservation Management, is one of the judges and said, "More and more farmers are recognising that running a profitable business and helping wildlife go hand in hand. The RSPB gives advice to help them do their bit for nature, and we'll support them every step. But ultimately it's them and their communities that do the work. The recent EU budget dealt a terrible hand, with potentially huge cuts to wildlife-friendly schemes. But there is hope for the UK, a country which has led the way. If Owen Paterson, Agricultural Minister, and his colleagues use their powers to ensure as much funding as possible goes towards those who provide the greatest benefits for wildlife, then all will not be lost."
This one is headed, "We don't want any more student flats." Stanmore residents are angry at plans to convert a family house into student flats. Robert Ducker has applied for planning permission to convert the house in Stuart Crescent into a two-storey, seven-bed house in multiple occupation. It includes demolishing an existing side extension and garage and building a new single-storey rear extension to create more rooms. But several residents argue the development is out of character with the area and will increase noise and litter problems. Neighbour Kevin Manili, 43, an engineer, said, "This is not the right place, and if these alterations are made, it could never again be used as a family home. From where we stand, we find the current situation pretty intolerable anyway, as students cause a noise nuisance, have frequent parties, and litter." Tony Carver, 67, also of Stuart Crescent, said, "We don't really see the need for this here, what with new student accommodation at Burma Road and student flats at Sparkford Road. It does not justify increasing this property to seven bedrooms." David Watson, 71, retired, of nearby Milner Place, added, "What's going to happen to the dustbins? And where are they all going to go with the extra rubbish produced by more people? And where are they going to park their cars, because there isn't room in the road?" But Mr. Ducker said Stanmore was entirely suitable because of its large student population. He said the house is already effectively an HMO because it is currently let to four students. If it goes through, the occupants will be able to park four cars there, which is reasonable for seven students. And I'm encouraging them to use bicycles by providing four bike spaces. Students do make noise, but I have a clause in the contract about not making excessive noise after 11 p.m, and that will stay. I'm also going to soundproof the ground floor walls because I have had complaints from the students about neighbours making noise. He added, "In terms of the actual structure, what I'm adding to the footprint is minimal, and I'm tearing down a tacky old garage and ramshackle extension and replacing it with something attractive and modern. The application is currently in consultation stage, and comments both for and against can be made until April 12th.
School declares war on waste. A Winchester primary school has declared war on waste. To mark National Waste Week, St Bede School held a series of events focusing on recycling and energy efficiency. Children produced sculptures from waste items, heard from guest speakers, and looked at reducing their energy footprint at school and at home. They were visited by the Quantum Theatre Company with their show What If It Rains, and Derek Taylor of the Hairy Pot Plant Company, who spoke about his environmentally friendly pots. Year 6 pupil Edward Agumba said, "Waste Week is very important because it prevents everything going into landfill and teaches us to think of waste as a useful resource. The world is running out of resources, so we need to be more careful about what and how we use things." As part of their bid to win an Eco Schools Green Flag Award, St Bede families also collected more than a ton of unwanted clothing under a scheme organised by Wastebuster, the environmental awareness campaign. In return, they will receive sports equipment.
And this one is headed, "Film Hampshire launches Winchester Film Festival." Now in its fifth year, the Winchester Film Festival will be screening a mix of classic and contemporary films from April the 4th to the 13th across Winchester and Eastleigh, and will be donating proceeds to Winchester Youth Counselling, a free and confidential counselling service for anyone aged 11 to 25 who lives in the Winchester district. Films on show in Winchester this year include Billy Wilder's courtroom classic Witness for the Prosecution in the Great Hall, George Cukor's 1939 high society romp The Women in L.K. Bennett on the High Street, the stunningly restored epic The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp at the Army Cadet Force HQ, Hitchcock's mystery thriller Stage Fright at the Theatre Royal, and in the Chesil Tunnel, Carol Reed's The Third Man and Carlo Ledesma's shocker The Tunnel. In Eastleigh, there will be screenings of Ron Howard's blistering blockbuster Backdraft at the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service headquarters, and Jay Blakeson's modern kidnap thriller The Disappearance of Alice Creed in the barred-windowed room at the sorting office. In addition to donations to Winchester Youth Counselling, 50% of the proceeds from Backdraft screening will go to the firefighters' charity. Festival organiser Christian Francis from the University of Winchester said, "As always, our aim is to screen great films in atmospheric and often unusual places in and around the city and district of Winchester. Each year we strive to find new and interesting locations that provide the perfect settings in which you can rediscover classic films or even catch them for the first time." David Fletcher, Hampshire County Council's Assistant Director of Economic Development, said, "I'm delighted that the County Council's Film Hampshire is sponsoring the launch of this event for the third year running, as the festival brings such a wide range of films to Winchester and Eastleigh. Film Hampshire actively promotes filming in Hampshire by providing film production companies with shoot locations. 2013 is an exciting year for the filming in Hampshire with Les Miserables, shot partly at Winchester College and Portsmouth Naval Base, already released, and more blockbuster productions in the pipeline. It's also a great to support a local charity and bring film screenings to unusual locations. The festival is a non-profit event organised by the School of Media and Film at the University of Winchester and sponsored by Hampshire County Council. A full programme for Winchester Film Festival 2013 is available at winchesterfilmfest.com, where tickets priced £5 can be booked."
This one is headed, "Con Man Duped His Way Into Homes." A con man tricked his way into two homes by claiming to be from the Water Board. Police are appealing for witnesses after the man gained entry to two homes in Buddens Road, Wickham, between 1:50 p.m. and 2:10 p.m. last Monday. He told the victims, aged in their late 70s and early 80s, their drains were faulty and water may be contaminated. Once inside, he distracted the victims by asking them to empty their under-sink cupboards and stole money from one of the homes. He is described as white, in his 50s, of big build, around 5'10" tall, with a fat face. He was wearing a black anorak, black jeans and a woolly hat. PC Cassandra Hacken from Winchester Police appealed for witnesses who may have had unusual callers to their homes or noticed anyone suspicious to get in touch. She urged people not to let anyone into their homes they were not expecting and to always check their identification. Anyone with information should contact PC Hacken on 101 or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. That is Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Black to move first in bin changes. Borough environment bosses are wheeling out changes to bin collections later this month. The single stream waste collection will mean that from April the 15th, Test Valley Borough Council will collect all black bins across the borough 1 week and all brown bins the following week. The day that residents' bins are collected will remain the same. Borough Cabinet Spokesman for the Environment, Peter Bolton, said residents affected by the first phase of change are those who put out their brown bin for collection the week commencing April the 15th. If this is the case for your household, please remember to put out your black bin instead. This will bring your collection in line with the rest of the borough. He added that the changes were being introduced to cater for the growing number of new housing developments across Test Valley. By undertaking these changes, we will avoid costly additional expenditure and can accommodate existing properties and planned new developments for the next 4 years, he said.
And this is headed Students Dig Deep. Winchester students have been shedding light on the deepest history of their playing field. The grounds of Peter Simmons College have been dug up over the last couple of weekends. The field off Berwick Road would have been outside the main settlement in Roman, Anglo-Saxon and the medieval periods. But the organiser, Stephen Jarvis, chemistry technician at the Sixth Form College, said, "We have found a few different finds, including some Bronze Age flints, about 4,000 years old, some clay pipes from the 17th century, and Tudor brick. I have been surprised at the amount of finds, bearing in mind it's outside the city boundary. It has been ideal as a training dig. We've had up to 24 students helping and 6 staff. A 2-metre hole was dug near the reputed site of a gallows, but nothing was unearthed directly connected. Mr. Jarvis, a member of Hampshire Field Club, is also planning to undertake a dig at the Highcliffe allotments off Milland Road this summer. He hopes to repeat the Simmons playing field dig next year, giving local students interested in history the chance for some practical experience. Mr. Jarvis's love of archaeology was sparked by the discovery of a 200,000-year-old axe he found as a schoolboy at Western Primary School when it was based in Elm Road, Fulflood. He will be writing a report for the Winchester Museum Service. And the article is accompanied by a photo of 3 Peter Simmons students, Matthew Salmon, Eleanor Little and Stephanie Cornwell, with some of the finds from an archaeological dig at the college's sports field. And they're all dressed warmly for the weather, but holding a big tray full of flints and interesting-looking bits of stone that they've dug up at the site.
Heating scheme to be extended is the headline here. Winchester civic chiefs have agreed to extend a government scheme across the city that could save residents money on their heating bills. Warm Up Winnow is targeted at homeowners, allowing them to get a replacement boiler free or at a reduced price. At a recent meeting of Winchester's Town Forum, councillors agreed to let it roll out citywide. They heard from climate change activists, Wynne Ack, who have conducted the awareness campaign in Winnow. Tina Lewis told the forum there are 1,400 properties in Winchester that could benefit. She also told councillors that in Winnow they expect 40 households to be involved. The group's director, Chris Halloway, had asked council bosses if they felt the scheme should be extended across Winchester. For more information, call 0800 952 0037 and quote Warm Up Winnow. I'll repeat that. Call 0800 952 0037 and quote Warm Up Winnow.
Support groups' actions speak volumes. A support group for people with learning difficulties decided to support others close to their hearts. Speak Up For Yourself has presented a cheque for £72 to Help For Heroes, the charity supporting wounded service personnel and their families. Shane Nickerson, 32, a member of the group, based at the Grove in Kingsworthy, said, "I like to support our lads who are out there in Afghanistan, and I thought it was important to raise money for them and help them out." He thanked Parish Councillor Malcolm Prince and Sue Russell for arranging a Zumba event which, along with a disco and raffle, raised the money. Speak Up For Yourself helps its members by identifying day-to-day issues that prevent them from living life to the full, then working with city and parish councils to resolve them. Kingsworthy Parish Council donated £100 towards the raffle. And this is accompanied with a lovely picture of members of the group, Shane Nickerson and several others, all cheerfully laughing as they hand over the cheque to Neil Bowens from Help the Heroes.
And this is People in Business and entitled Five Former Managers in Buyout of Vineyard. And it's about Wickham Vineyard. One of Hampshire's best-known vineyards has been saved by former managers who now plan to make it more of a tourist attraction. Wickham Vineyard near Shedfield has reopened after crashing into administration last December. Five of the original management team have organised a buyout for an undisclosed sum and have taken over sales and production as well as the vineyard restaurant. The buyout covers the equipment, buildings and vines and wine, but not the land itself, which remains under the ownership of Knighton Parrick. Wickham Wine Estates Limited, the new company, is headed by director Wilhelm Meet, with Jonathan Rogers, who was the estate manager looking after the sales and marketing, Julian Moran looking after the production, and Paolo Silva dealing with IT, and Paul Dive returning as restaurant manager and chef. The company has also taken on Jessica Mead to look after weddings and events. Mr. Rogers said, "There are a few of us who actually care about this vineyard, and we could not let it fall apart, especially when we know how good it can be, even supplying wine for the Queen at a Jubilee lunch celebration last year. It's going to be very hard work, as we have half the numbers of staff we used to have, 10 down to 5, but we are all prepared to put the time and effort into making it into the success it was. We all have our roles to play, but it also means that everyone will be doing a bit of everything." The vineyard went into administration due to the overambitious purchase of 15 ex-Thresher wine shops 2 years ago, which were rebranded Wine Shack. The vineyard was dragged down by the off-licence. The Wine Shack shops are not part of the buyout and have been liquidated. Mr. Rogers said the 18-acre vineyard, established in 1984, was profitable. The new team planned to tweak the restaurant, making it more of a team room during the day, with semi-fine dining in the evening. Buildings could be leased to local artists for studios. "We want to attract a far wider clientele to the vineyard, where people can just relax during the day, soaking up the beautiful surroundings over a coffee, a cup of tea, or a glass of wine. It's a beautiful place, and we're all proud of what we have here. It should be enjoyed by everyone." The vineyard will continue to offer room hire facilities, guided and audio tours, wine courses and corporate events. Weddings will also feature heavily with the new company. Wine growing is becoming a big business in Hampshire, with several new vineyards opening in recent years, including at Weald, Bramdean and Cheriton. And the article is accompanied by the leaders of this new project, all in the vineyard, in the sunshine, but toasting themselves with a glass of red wine.
Now we have a picture of these litter pickers here, looking very pleased with themselves, with Steve Brine. And the article is headed, "Litter Pickers Warmed by City's MP." Winchester litter pickers received a warming pit stop from MP Steve Brine during a morning's work in the Full Flood area last Wednesday. The group, led by Chairman David Jones, organised one of its sorties in the city suburb and dropped in for some tea and biscuits at the MP's Stockbridge Road office nearby. Mr. Brine, pictured with the pickers in this article, said, "I'm always keen to support the Winchester litter pickers who turn out come rain or shine to help keep our city streets clean and tidy. This was just a chance for me to thank them for their work and to warm them up before they set about their work. I hope local residents noticed a difference after they had swept through. If you are interested in getting involved with the Winchester Letter Pickers, contact Mr. Jones on 01962 868 06. I'll say that again. 01962 868 06.
Here's a story that could come straight out of a soap opera or a sitcom. Wed domain ruling sets precedent. Woman has no right to name. A row over an internet domain used by a furious Winchester divorcee to lambast her ex-husband has led to a controversial ruling that no one has a freestanding right to stop their name being used online. Wendy Croxford registered her ex-husband's surname as a domain name for her website after they split, and he married Danish woman Maiken Vidbo. Her ex, Simon Mitchell, and his new wife changed their name to Vidbo Mitchell after they wed, and Mrs. Croxford of Stony Lane Week last year became registered owner of the web domain vidbromitchell.co.uk. This brought a furious response from Mrs. Vidbo Mitchell, who claimed Mrs. Croxford has since used it as a hate or protest site to voice obsessive criticism of her ex-husband. Angry that the website pops up whenever the double-barreled moniker is typed into Google, Mrs. Vidbo Mitchell of Sutton Valence, Kent, asked Nominet, the organisation which polices web domains in the UK, to strip Mrs. Croxford of the website. But in a decision that will shock many proud bearers of rare family names, Nominet ruled there is no freestanding right of personality. And however unusual Mrs. Vidbo Mitchell's name may be, she cannot stop Mrs. Croxford from using it. She argued that even in her homeland, only a tiny handful of people bear the name Fridbro. Mrs. Croxford's personal, emotive and one-sided criticisms of her ex-husband on the website were having a knock-on effect on her and had caused anxiety and distress to her two children, she told Nominet expert Andrew Clinton. But Mrs. Croxford, who split from her ex-husband more than a decade ago, denied having done anything wrong and insisted the website was a legitimate means of highlighting his alleged failure to meet child maintenance and court cost orders. The domain has nothing to do with Mrs. Vidbo Mitchell, and that was made clear on the website, she said. Refusing to transfer the domain name to Mrs. Vidbo Mitchell, Mr. Clinton said, "There is no freestanding general right of personality, i.e., a right by which a person with a particular name can seek to prevent the use of that name by others." And that's potent to me, as my name is Thorpe Tracy.
Well, I'll see if I can get the domain name for you then, Noel. So that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And, of course, thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. We should also thank our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.